prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, November 28th, 2023. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy belated holiday, Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
To all our listeners, and happy National Giving Day.
Giving?
Yes, on a Tuesday after Thanksgiving, people around the world come together for one common purpose, to celebrate generosity and giving to others. In 2012, the 92nd Street Y in New York City created Day of Giving to bring focus to the charitable season in the wake of the over-commercialized Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And so it's a great day to give generously to your favorite charity. And listen, I'd certainly be remiss on a more sort of humorous note if I didn't acknowledge that it's also National Allen Day, believe it or not. Yes, it's a day when we celebrate those with the first, middle, or last name of Allen, regardless of spelling. There we go. So hats off to my great-grandfather, who I was named after, and his English ancestors, who came to America during the late 18th century. And I bet they brought some gold and silver with them too, Melody.
Probably. Well, is there a National Melody Day?
Oh, I will be sure to look that up before next Tuesday. And we will celebrate it. Actually, we celebrate here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading and Financial Survival. We celebrate Melody Day every day of the week.
There you go.
How's that for a... a Thanksgiving kiss up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That worked. It worked. It worked because gold is up today.
Oh, man.
Again.
Ever.
$27. Okay. 2041 off the high of 2043. So pressure on the dollar, but you have silver up 37 cents, over $25, 25.09 to be exact. This is in the New York spot price aftermarket. Platinum was up $24, big day for platinum, 952. Palladium was down 17 at 1,078. Now, let's see what the dollar did. Down 0.40 at 102.81. Crude oil was up buck and a half at 76.42. The paper markets today, you have Charlie Munger died. Did you see that, Dave?
I did not see that.
Yeah. This was Warren Buffett's right-hand man. I didn't realize he was 99.
Yeah, I mean, he's right up there with Jimmy Carter.
Oh, Charlie Munger. I was never a fan of he didn't like gold, you know.
Yes.
Neither one of them liked gold, but yet, you know. But, yeah, he was 99. How old's Buffett?
He's not too far behind.
Yeah.
A couple of years.
Yeah. Dow Jones was up 83 points today, 35,416. S&P up 4,554. NASDAQ up 40, 14,281. European markets, let's see what they did overnight. The DAX was higher. Others were lower. Asian markets were negative. China was higher, you know, 6 points. You know, markets have been very weak. I don't know what the volume has been, but I'm assuming that it's very low volume with these numbers that we've been seeing. 10-year yield continues to drop, 4.33, putting pressure on the dollar. And, of course, it's all good for gold. Gold goes up regardless. You know, it might have some knee-jerk reactions one way or another, but long-term in the trend, gold is higher. My personal favorite natural gas is down almost 4% at 2.68 for natural gas. So that was pretty much it in the numbers. So a great day for gold and silver. You know, Dave, I ran a special yesterday. It's only good until tomorrow. So any programs that are run tomorrow, the special does not exist. We are out. But it was run at a Carla, my assistant, said, well, you know, you know, she says, if you reprice that special is really low. I said, I know. We figured that special with product several weeks ago. So it's about, if you bought that same special, a 10th-ounce American Gold Eagle and 20 Silver Eagles, including shipping, you're looking anywhere to about $80 to $100 difference in just that short period of time. So that's how fast things can turn around, ladies and gentlemen. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And, of course, you know, I don't think this has an impact anymore, Dave. I don't know. But
what the Fed says?
What the Fed says. I don't, you know.
The markets are certainly not hanging on to their every word. Let's say that.
You know, I think they're just making noise now to make people believe that what they're doing is working. But yet in the background of everything that they've done, the Federal Reserve and our Treasury Department and so forth have destroyed our financial system.
Yeah. Could be too, Melody, that they're trying to take attention away, potential media attention away from other things that we should be actually hearing more about with respect to the Fed, about some of the secret goings on. With how they're propping up the financial system.
And, yep.
And oh, how about all these investigations about their former Dallas and Boston Fed presidents and even Chair Powell's own investments? Haven't heard anything about them lately, have you?
No, you haven't. No, you haven't. And, you know, you're not going to hear about it. It would disrupt the, you know, their promotion of everything is good. Yes. And I was surprised to see a number, if I can recall, I'll have to look it up maybe on break, where they were talking about the treasuries and they were talking about China and Japan. And just 10 years ago, they owned like 22%. Today, it's like 7%. I mean, it was a huge drop of you know, because we know Japan is, you know, trying to prop up and sell the U.S. treasuries to prop up their own currency. And it's, there's just no rhyme or reason out there. Everybody is just, they're adjusting or doing something for whatever comes their way at that moment. You know, there's, so it's, It's interesting, and the way we got here is the Fed governors kind of differ on whether the Fed is done hiking or not. There's no way they can be finished hiking with the prices still as high as they are. Now, inflation might have gone down, but your food and everything, you know, gasoline has come down a little bit, but your food and so many other things are not coming down to the degree that they should be for them to actually stop hiking. But anyway, the Federal Reserve Governor Christopher Waller said today he's growing more confident that policy is in place now to bring inflation back under control. there was nothing. Let's take a peek at what people spent this weekend on credit cards and tell me that inflation is under control. There was nothing in Waller's prepared remarks for a speech in Washington that suggests he's contemplating cutting interest rates anytime soon. At least they concur that inflation is still too high. He had pointed out a variety of areas where progress had been made, suggesting the Fed at least won't need to hike rates further from here. He says, "While I'm encouraged by the early signs of moderating economic activity in the fourth quarter based on the data in hand, inflation is still too high, and it's too early to say whether the slowing we are seeing will be sustained." But he is confident the policy is currently well positioned. Okay. And to slow the economy and get inflation back to 2%. That's not going to happen. Michelle Bowman offered a contrasting view where she reiterated her belief that more rate hikes likely will be needed. So, you know, this comes 2 weeks before the FOMC's December 12 to 13 meeting, Dave.
Yeah, and right now, as of earlier this afternoon, 96% of Fed fund future traders expect the Fed to hold that key lending rate steady at 5.25% to 5.5%. In fact, as I'll talk about more in the third segment today, the consensus of these traders, which happens to be fairly accurate, not completely. There's definitely a standard deviation there, but. A majority, for example, don't see any cuts until next May at the earliest, more probably June. Again, we'll have to wait and see what happens between now and then. There's just a whole lot of Fed speak going on. Because they're more than one policymaker on the FOMC, you're going to hear more than one opinion each and every day. Waller's been one of the more hawkish members, meaning he's favored tighter policy and higher rates over the last year. I've retitled his speech today, "Something Appears to Be Giving." Appropriately, I'm sure. Day of Giving. But a contrast to a recent speech he had titled, "Something's Got to Give." He does appear to be coming around. But listen, the thing to always remember, as Melody likes to say, we have a dollar, a fiat currency. And so we're always going to have inflation. And as the purchasing power continues to be eroded, gold can only go one way, ladies and gentlemen. And then I'm talking long term. I'm not talking day to day because there's so much manipulation in the markets out there. It can only go up as long as, unless there's a complete reset that is coming out of another universe. Because most of the resets we see would result in the devastation of fiat currencies and thus the skyrocketing of gold and silver prices.
Exactly. So, bring on the reset. Bring it on, baby. It's interesting where, higher mortgage rates really, it's doing somewhat. I'm not sure, that home prices are continuing to rise. Nationally, prices were 3.9% higher in September compared with the same month a year earlier. Now, this is all from the CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index. And and this was compared with the same month a year earlier, up from a 2.5% annual gain in August. So this occurred as the average rate on the 30-year fixed mortgage climbed toward the 8%. Of the 20 metropolitan markets that were highlighted in this report, Detroit saw the biggest annual increase at 6.7%. Well, I can understand that because they were followed by San Diego at 6.5%. Pardon?
They were in the pits.
Yeah, they were in the pits. And what's interesting, I was right before the program, I was reading something about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, where the government is increasing mortgage limits in San Diego.
Oh.
Up to one point, I think it was 1.5 million.
Wow.
And there's some other hot spots across the country where they're increasing the mortgage limits for Fannie and Freddie. So to me, that is anticipating they're not expecting inflation to go away.
Yeah, I mean, certainly as it affects housing, that's an interesting.
Yeah. And now they didn't talk about, you know, the rates and so forth that would be, you know, offered. But in California, a $1.5 million home is an 800 square foot home. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so so three of the 20 cities, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, reported lower prices compared with a year ago. And those cities were some of the biggest gainers in the first few years of the pandemic. So it is interesting.
Yeah, it sure is. And home prices nationally have risen over 6% this year so far, but much more than the median full calendar year increase in more than 35 years of the this index. Their CEO has noted that unless higher rates or outside events lead to general economic weakness, the breadth and strength of this month's report are consistent with an optimistic view of future results. Well, it's one of the few. Right now, I mean, we know home builder sentiment has been in the tank in most of the country for, many, many months right now. Now, the national median rent happened to drop almost 1% in November from the month before. That's according to Apartment List. Benchmark figures now fallen 3.5% from its all-time high in August last year. Rent, however, on average is nearly $250 a month more than it was 3 years ago, Melody.
Hmm. Do you do any shopping on Black Friday?
Oh, I hate to admit I was in bed most of Friday. Recovering from, I don't know what my grandkids brought home earlier in the week, but my everyone else in my family, from my wife, our son who was visiting, our daughter and her two kids went shopping, said there were some pretty good deals out there. If they came home with more than just the two or three things they came in the house with, and they're hiding it from me.
Maybe it was your Christmas gifts.
One can only hope.
Well, you know, Amazon said today that it rang up a record-breaking sales in the run-up to Cyber Monday. And the company said the period from November 17th to yesterday marked its biggest ever holiday shopping event compared to the same 11-day stretch last year. They didn't disclose actual sales figures, but they said shoppers worldwide bought more than 1 billion items during that period.
Their drivers are busy, are going to be busy.
And I just saw, too, where Amazon shipping has outpaced both FedEx and UPS.
That's amazing.
It really is. And the sad thing about it is Amazon uses a lot of the USPS to help them with that. Mm-hmm. So therefore, our services, you know, people, our services continue to go down at the USPS. But that's an incredible, a billion items during the period. And we'll continue with that when we get back from this break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Phone number at Discount Gold and Silver is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter edited by Dave Allen, so who we're celebrating Allen's today.
Hey, thank you very much.
Well, you're quite welcome. Heading into the break, we were just talking about the billion items that were sold through Amazon, and you know, we've seen more shopping move online, and I, you know, Dave, as expensive as things are, it gives people a chance to shop around and get the lowest price. You just can't do that in a store.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with it. Big sales days like Black Friday and Cyber Monday don't seem to have the same significance as they used to. So,
well, yeah, and Amazon's Prime, is that what they call it, Prime Days?
Prime,
you know, yeah. Start in October.
Yep.
Now, so then get shoppers can who are paying attention and who have some spare change saved up at that point can get a head start. Mm-hmm. Me, I tend to like to wait for that third week in December.
I prefer to wait for the day before.
That was my old tradition when stores were still in vogue. I'd take the day off, And I would spend 8, 10, 12 hours just walking the King of Prussia Mall outside of Philadelphia. And it was a wonderful thing. I enjoyed the living heck out of it.
You know what? It's true. I mean, there was just something about those days when you went to the mall. I mean, everything was so decorated. Everything was so celebrated.
Yeah.
You know, you saw Santa just about it. People were
happy. Carrying bags, feeling good about themselves.
Yep. Feeling happy. Now, you know, they either drudge to the store and buy gift cards or, you know, do everything online. And I don't think they get any pleasure, very little pleasure out of it. It truly more pleasure for the kids, buying for the young ones. But
did spend $12.4 billion just yesterday.
You did?
We as a nation did.
Wow.
That's up 10%. From a year ago. That's a big chunk of change.
And it's all credit.
Yes, it'd be interesting to see what those figures are when they come out in a couple of weeks. Online sales during all of Cyber Week, 5 days between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday, $38 billion.
Wow.
Credit cards must be... And also, as we'll talk about next a little bit, using this buy now, pay later scheme that seems to be taking off.
Absolutely. You know, that bodes well for the retailers. But, there's some credit experts out there that are sounding the alarm bells because of this. The short-term loans, often come with consumer-friendly interest rates, and it allows shoppers to make an initial payment at checkout. Then they pay the rest in installments, and usually it's over a few weeks, maybe a month. And so this really is appealing to shoppers who buy multiple gifts for family and friends. And so data shows that younger consumers and those with difficulty accessing credit use the loans more frequently. So these are subprime buyers.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see, even if they can do these payments for a few weeks or a month, Dave.
$6.4 billion of online spending with these short-term installment loans in October alone. Just be careful, ladies and gentlemen. It just seems so easy, but just make sure you know what you're doing. Because if you pay later, you miss a payment, they're gonna get you. And you can get shut out of the app that many of these places are using now, and get hit with these interest charges and late penalties.
Mm.
I don't know if $25 is a little or a lot. You're working paycheck to paycheck, an extra $25 for nothing is certainly going to be a lot more. And especially if these late fees are calculated as a percentage of your overall loan, that can get expensive real fast. But be careful, especially if you're doing this with more than one lender. Because it can catch up to you.
And, there's about 2 in 3 Americans say their household expenses have risen over the last year. So, again, that adds to that, short-term loans and so forth that people are doing. Because I said yesterday, people can't say no anymore. They're addicted. They were literally addicted. They can't say, no, I don't need this. I don't need to put this on installment loans. I'm going to figure something else out. When we read about half of the working class, half of the working Americans make less than, $48,000?
Yeah.
Half? So about 1 in 4 say their income has increased in the same period, but it's not enough to cover the expenses that have increased. And their household debt is higher, or about the same as it was, and that's 8 in 10 Americans who say that. About half say they currently have a credit card debt. 4 in 10 are dealing with auto loans, and about 1 in 4 have medical debt. 15% say their household savings have increased over the last year.
Yikes.
Yeah. That's a pretty sad number. So only 26% of Americans say they are very or extremely confident that they could pay an unexpected medical expense. But they don't give the amount of that medical expense.
Yeah.
And what's really sad, considering we're the baby boomers generation, just 18% feel that they have enough money for retirement. So.
Yeah. I mean, 54% of all Americans describe their household's financial situation as good, which is about the same as last year, but it's down from 63% in March 2022. Now, that might be nothing more than a function of the government stimulus aid during the pandemic. But 39% of 18 to 29-year-olds describe their finances as good, compared to 58% of those who are 30 and older. But again, among those who are retired, only 3 in 10 say they're highly confident that they've saved enough for retirement. 31% not very confident or not confident at all.
Not good numbers.
Who was it? Southside Johnny, leader of the Asbury Jukes, once wrote in a song, "All I Want Is Everything."
I thought it was my front teeth. My two front. All I ever want is my two front teeth.
Well, depends. I remember.
Since we're in this holiday spirit here. And, you know, it is interesting. I mean, we have a little bit of a difference of opinion. But, you know, workers here, you know, they want more to go back to work. They want more incentives to return to the office.
You get to keep your job.
How about that? You know, but the sad thing is it true that employers would have a hard time replacing them? Can you fire them based on them not coming back to work in an office?
If you're asking, well, from my layperson point of view, having dealt in HR issues as you have over the years, I think unless it was a unionized workplace, that the clear answer to that is yes. Employers have great flexibility, that most employees are at will. Employees who can be, you know, fired for any non-discriminatory reason, and working from home is not covered by the anti-discrimination laws of our country.
Yeah. But, you know, it might be an issue for some companies. 13% of employers have introduced new incentives that would make employees more satisfied. This was a new poll that was conducted by NORC at the University of Chicago. About 3 in 4 human resource reps said that retaining employees who didn't want to work in the office is a problem, including 19% who called it a major problem. Another 54% of HR representatives just called it a minor problem. And only about 1/3 of HR professionals say employees at their workplace are extremely or very happy about returning to the workplace. I would think most people would be happy to return to the workplace. You know? Well, it's a social event anymore.
Yeah, geez. It's just a different time. I mean, Bill Castellano, who is a professor at Rutgers University School of Management and Labor Relations, said that flexibility is the key issue, particularly in giving employees flexibility for scheduling their work hours, and probably their work location. Now, he says there are some initiatives that could incentivize more employees to work at the office, or at least increase their satisfaction about already going into the office, however many days a week it is. 55% of hybrid workers, Melody, say paying employees more for their in-office work would provide a lot of encouragement for them to work in person more often. Additional pay topped the list across respondents to the survey, whether they were working in person, remotely, or in hybrid roles. However, just 4% of these HR reps whose companies have introduced new policies to get employees back to the workplace say that higher compensation is among them. So that as much as I'm a proponent of a hybrid work situation, I'm glad that most employers, it looks like the vast majority, are not being sort of held hostage to higher pay just for coming into the office.
Anyway. And you know the flexibility thing, if people went to work and did their job, did it well, was on time and focused, if they needed time off and stuff, it's not an issue. Usually it's not. So have we gotten to a point where, you know, we don't do that? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah.
So flexibility is great, but you still have to do your job. It's kind of like you have to earn it. What a concept, you know? Anyway, yeah. I'm old school.
Yeah, old school, new school. I mean, it's looks as though it's still being heavily practiced.
Well, you know, gig workers, they're not being counted as employed, Dave. There's millions of Americans are doing casual work while not counting as employed for purposes of the government's official statistics. If more Americans are open to working than is implied by traditional economic data, the job market may be less tight than the numbers make it appear, with more people open to opportunities for higher pay and more stable work. So the share of adults who are counted as employed would be higher by up to 5.1 percentage points if the people doing casual gig work properly reported doing so in the current population survey.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but I have to think about that. What is the work that a gig worker does?
Well, it could be being a freelance writer. It could be, it used to be being an Uber or a Lyft driver. Could be, you know, waitressing. House cleaners, even possibly. Yeah, there's a wide range of types of jobs that are considered casual or gig oriented.
Well, most likely, if they go, you know, if they stop working, they don't qualify for unemployment. Correct?
Well, that used to be, yeah. There were some fundamental the change made during the pandemic. I forget if that was one of the changes that went away since then, but gig workers ended up being covered by that for a while. But in terms of the reliability of government statistics that we're getting, is I guess where I'm seeing this from. Not sure that's the main big picture issue here, but it's one of them. Because I mean, these uncounted workers could be an untapped source of new labor supply. And that could mean, among other things, that the government's U6 rate of unemployment, which we prefer over the consistently undercounted headline rate, is higher than what's reported. The U6 rate includes discouraged job hunters and those working part time but would like full time work, which it seems, according to this article, you know, is a lot of these gig workers around the country. So it could turn out that, you know, U6, which is close to double, not maybe 80% higher than the U3 rate, could actually be even higher than that.
So you'd be looking about 11%, 12%.
Well, it depends. Yeah, it depends on
Well, maybe not all that 5%, but.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, yeah, because, I mean, I think the U6 rate's at like 7.1 or 7.2%, something like that.
Well, you know, the debt and our government and payments and so forth are going to be coming into the news again here shortly. And the Federal Reserve said it's going to need 4 more years to cover its historic operating loss. And I don't know if we'll have time to finish that. Maybe we'll save it for Thursday. But stay tuned. Yeah, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Take a look at me. Come on, baby.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other client business. This final segment, you can call her at 1-800-375-4188. Talking a lot about workers and jobs, employment, and what have you in the program today. And here's something your boss would probably rather you didn't know. But workers still have a lot of leverage right now, from highly paid AI engineers to teachers, delivery drivers, and auto workers. And employees seem to be getting a lot of what they want, thanks in part to a very tight labor market. Although, you know, according to the last article Melody and I talked about, might not be as tight as we've been led to believe. In any event, the headline unemployment rate has been below 4% for 21 straight months now. That's the longest stretch since the late 1960s. The share of prime age workers, those 25 to 54 who are employed, is hovering at a 22-year high, meaning there aren't many folks left out there who businesses can hire. And demographics may keep things tight for the long haul as the population ages and messy politics hold back any kind of strategic immigration growth. Whatever the case, with fewer workers available, companies have less leverage over employees. They can't necessarily rely on an unlimited pool of labor to keep things running. That's why you're seeing growth in real wages this year, inflation-adjusted wages. Workers in any field can demand higher raises. It also helps explain why, despite the bluster of many CEOs, offices aren't all filled back up yet with workers. Many of those working remotely have the power to just not go back to the office 5 days a week. The tight labor market is the backdrop to all the union action we've seen over the past year or so. It's why UPS drivers got a great deal without striking, and UAW workers just ratified the best contract they've seen in decades. But not all workers. In sectors that are shrinking, like media, for example, workers have less leverage to make demands as companies are looking to cut costs. At the high end of the pay scale, look at the wild drama at the company OpenAI last week. A few days after the company's CEO, Sam Altman, was fired, almost all of OpenAI's employees threatened to quit if he wasn't reinstated. Well, the board listened and the employees got what they wanted, and fast. Altman was reinstated just one day after the letter was made public. Crazy. And as if the markets for AI jobs weren't already tight enough, I mean, federal agencies are now scrambling to hire more than 400 chief AI officers by the end of this year. One of the edicts of President Biden's recent AI executive order aims to make sure that every arm of the federal government has a top exec who's ready to deal with artificial intelligence. These chief AI officers, as they're being called, CAIOs, will be employed at the senior executive service level, which normally requires a PhD, meaning a maximum pay of $212,100. In comparison, the lowest comparable salary in Glassdoor's database is $223,000, roughly, more than the highest available to a government CAIO. Well, President Biden taking aim at corporations again for charging prices he says are artificially high, even though the rate of inflation has slowed and even shipping costs have fallen. Biden said any corporation that hasn't brought their prices back down, even as inflation has come down, even as the supply chains have been rebuilt, it's time to stop the price gouging. Yes, it's true that the annual rate of inflation has cooled from its high last summer, but it doesn't translate directly into falling consumer prices, certainly not right away. It only means that prices are rising at a lower rate. Prices for some everyday goods have fallen over the past year, a reality reflected in lower Thanksgiving costs this year, for example. And lower costs have in turn left some consumers with more money in their budgets for things like Black Friday and Cyber Monday shopping. Hopefully a little bit left over for Day of Giving today. Well, as Biden runs for re-election next year, the White House has sought to claim these broad spending and pricing trends as victories for the prez and his economic agenda. But the argument that Biden deserves the credit for a strong economic recovery, well, that's proving to be a tough sell to voters who consistently give the president low marks on the economy. Faced with a skeptical audience targeting so-called junk fees, which Biden said companies sneak into your bill, offers the White House with a chance to directly show voters what he's doing on our behalf. It also provides the president, they say, with an easy target in the inflation blame game. Consumers, Biden said, feel like they're being played for suckers, which they are, quote unquote. As America emerged from the pandemic, prices soared. In the 2 years starting in April 2021, the average price of all goods rose 13%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The average price of food in that same period jumped a whopping 20%. Well, the price hikes were driven by a combination of pent-up consumer demand, pandemic-era economic stimulus, and ongoing supply chain snarls, which still exist, albeit at a lower level today. As a result, inflation hit four-decade highs and consumers felt their budgets under pressure big time. Well, Biden's new Supply Chain Resilience Council launched this week will aim to help keep the momentum of that recovery going, in theory anyway. As part of the council's creation, Biden also announced 30 different initiatives to help ease supply chain pressures and prevent future shortages for products like drugs and semiconductors. Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. It features Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin. The Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought will be delayed for just 1 week. We'll be back. She'll be back with us again next Monday. And I have a piece called It's That Time Again. A little more than a month left in 2023. Economists and other Wall Street types are looking ahead, but then again, aren't they always? Most analysts believe the economy and inflation will slow next year, with the Fed moving to cut interest rates May, June, certainly by the end of the year. Here are some of the highlights of what we're reading the pundits are expecting. First, inflation. In a nutshell, it'll keep falling next year. I mean, if the too big to fail say it will, it must be so, right? One of them, Morgan Stanley analysts, say a disinflationary cycle has been underway, mainly driven by core goods deflation and disinflation in housing. Goldman Sachs says at this point, the hard part of the inflation fight looks over. Glad they think so. And JP Morgan Chase, we think that core PCE inflation should moderate from a 3.4% annualized pace this year to 2.5% in the first half of 2024, which is the point that people expect the Fed to start cutting. PCE, core PCE, is again, is the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation. Now, next, interest rates. They're finished for this tightening cycle. Done. Kaput. The only debate is when the Fed will start to cut. Morgan Stanley says, well, the Fed holds policy at 5.375% peak of this cycle until June 2024, when we expect a cutting cycle to normalize rates to begin. Goldman Sachs, we expect the FOMC to deliver its first rate cut in the fourth quarter next year once core PCE inflation falls below 2.5%. And Moody's, I presume this is Moody's Analytics. We envision the Fed's first rate cut around the end of the second quarter next year, by June, that is, an accumulative decline of at least 100 basis points to 4.25 to 4.5% by December 2024. And the U.S. economy as a whole. In short, they say, look for a slowdown in 2024. Too big to fail, UBS says, while we expect a slowdown, we do not expect a significant contraction in activity. Oxford Economics sees a material slowdown in the U.S. economy in the next couple of quarters to give way to a modest acceleration in GDP growth in the second half of 24, in effect, the Fed pulling off a softish landing. TD Security notes our 2024 outlook revolves around our view of slowing U.S. and global growth, culminating in a mid-2024 U.S. recession. And Deutsche Bank says a mild recession could hit the U.S. in the first half of 2024. The lagged impact of interest rate hikes will trigger a recession, though it won't be a severe one, quote, unquote. They expect headline unemployment to peak at 4.6% by the third quarter. The downturn, they predict, will lead the Fed to begin cutting rates in June with a total of 1.75 percentage points of cuts next year. It's one of the last 13 Fed hiking cycles, by the way, has led to a recession within 18 months. With six cycles leading to a recession between 19 and 28 months. By the way, it's now been 20 months since the first Fed hike of this particular cycle. Remember Matt Phillips' cautionary tale that nobody, not even Wall Street's best analysts and economists, can tell the future. The moral, ladies and gentlemen, keep plenty of salt in stock as you're reading all these forecasts. Now look, Monday morning quarterbacks are one thing, but a lot of traders also expect rate cuts, interest rate cuts next year, and it looks like they're putting their money where their mouth is. As we mentioned earlier today, traders in the CME Group's Fed Funds futures market see a better than 50% chance that the Fed will lower its target policy rate again at 5.25% to 5.5% at their May 2024 meeting. In fact, they see 80% odds of that by June. Phillips says this growing consensus that the Fed will take its foot off the brakes by late next spring stems from the steady stream of economic data showing inflation falling without a real tumble in the overall economy. Others are saying that improvements in the supply side of the economy could also improve the nation's persistent inflation. Experts believe if there's further progress with supply chains, that could lead to disinflation and less pains overall for consumers. The White House has announced roughly 30 measures aimed at improving America's supply chains and trying to head off shortages of key goods, as we mentioned at the end of the last segment. It's an effort being undertaken in part with the hope that more disinflation can come from increasing supply. Now, on Sunday, the White House's chief economic advisor, Lal Brainard, formerly of the Fed, said, "We're pleased with the progress on supply chains that was showing up in lower prices, but we're determined to keep working to bring down prices for American consumers and ensure the resilience of our supply chains for the future." Well, by one measure, the supply chain bottlenecks that skyrocketed during the pandemic have already receded and then some. The New York Fed's Global Supply Chain Pressure Index saw a record low reading last month, a sign that the worst of the supply long jams is actually behind us. One White House official said there's likely more disinflation to come from the supply channel, citing more capacity for companies to bring prices back down as their own input costs fall. Well, how these new efforts assist in the near-term inflation fight remain to be seen, but they do mark the latest attempt by the government to strengthen these supply chains as a preventive measure. But the Fed leadership hasn't bought into the idea that this progress will create an ongoing boost to our nation's economic potential. Earlier this month, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said, "While the broader supply recovery continues, it's not clear how much more will be achieved by additional supply-side improvements. Going forward," he added, "it may be that a greater share of the progress in reducing inflation will have to come from tight monetary policy restraining the growth of aggregate demand." These folks can just not seem to get out of their own way. Meanwhile, some say the Biden administration is betting that supply-driven improvements aided by its actions will do some of the disinflationary work and that the Fed won't need to do much more to crush demand as a result. And look, whichever narrative turns out to be the right path, if in fact either one is, will probably determine, largely anyway, what the economy will look like in the coming year. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch here tomorrow with Melody along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks as always to our production engineer Todd Waite and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.